coming to our town. It's gonna be good.
Hope it don't flood.
Oh, it's floods of streams.
I don't. Good afternoon. This is Lori Beckel coming to you with the What's Upstream show. Today is Wednesday, March 11th already, and you are listening to KYGT LPFM 102.7 and 103.9 on the listening dial, streaming worldwide on clearcreekradio.com. Pleased to be with you today. We have a very interesting guest for What's Upstream. A new friend of mine, Glenn Sawyer, is going to be talking with us sort of in the vein of my old program, All People Considered, What Brought Glenn to Clear Creek County. And then Glenn will also share with us his love of making music and helping artists record their music. And he does this all on the top of Floyd Hill at the Spot Studio. So we will be talking with Glenn a little bit more about that in just a minute. I have a PSA to read about K-Goat marking its 31st year. Amazing. Thank you, Greg Markle. Please consider making a contribution to help us stay on the air. Click on Donate Now at the top of any page of our website, clearcreekradio.com. You can make a one-time gift or set up a regular payment of any amount. Clear Creek Radio is an exempt 501c3 charitable organization. Your gift will be tax deductible. Keep listening and keep community radio alive and well in Clear Creek County. Thank you so much. We appreciate all of your support. I don't know that I introduced myself, but my name is Lori Beckel. I do this program at noon on Wednesdays, typically with my partner, Mark Cuccinelli. I think Mark is still in Italy for a couple more weeks, but he will be back towards the end of March. And have been having some really fun guests on, including, let me introduce you to Glenn Sawyer. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Lori. Thanks so much for having me today.
So happy to have you. You were willing to come in and share all about you, and we're just delighted to learn. So let's do start with the way I started my previous radio show, and that was, so Glenn Sawyer, what brought you to Clear Creek County?
So it's kind of a, I guess, funny story. I did not really intend to end up in Clear Creek County. So I was in Lakewood, which is where we started the Spot Studios. The Spot is myself and my production partner, Rich Veltrop, who I met in Northern California at a studio, Radio Star Studios. So we found the Samsonite Luggage Company's family mansion on Craigslist in 2013. It was a 7,800 square foot mansion. We had no business being in there. They gave us a absolutely screaming deal. We were in there for $3,300 a month, which is just insane.
Now, is this in Lakewood?
This was in Lakewood.
Okay.
It was on a unincorporated piece of land in Jeffco.
Wow.
Which was the only way that we were able to do what we did there.
Wow.
So we were there for 6 years. We loved it. The family that owned the home, they when we moved in, they told us their long-term goal was to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of always knew it was coming, but we're hoping that it wouldn't happen. And then 2019, kind of the signs were on the wall. So I started looking. And because of the fact, so I run the studio out of my home.
Mm-hmm.
And you might think, oh, well, it's kind of like just the basement or something, but I've actually turned 70% of the home into a studio, much to the chagrin of my wonderful girlfriend.
And you and you and Heather probably live in a studio now in your home, little studio apartment.
We do. I know she's a good one because there's days that I say, I know it's your Saturday, but we're going to be recording acoustic guitar in the main room all day long. And she essentially, a lot of times she says, you know what, I'm going to go out and do something nice for myself. But other days she's kind of stuck in her room. But like I said, she's wonderful, a real sport.
Terrific.
About it. So
you want a partner like that, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, very much so. Especially given my lifestyle and my schedule with the studio and whatnot. So anyways, they booted us. And because I'm looking for, our kind of philosophy has been to find spaces that already sound good and take them the rest of the way versus trying to build out something.
Mm-hmm. And so, meaning, so define if you would quick something that sounds good, that acoustics in the building
yes.
are already lend themselves to good sound.
Yes. So when people think about recording, a lot of people are like, well, you just need a mic and an instrument. But the room that you're in plays a huge part in the sound that comes across. So if you do not have a good room that you're recording in, you are just behind the eight ball to begin with.
I see.
So when I did my search, I did not have specific areas I wanted to be in. I had certain things that I was looking for. So I was looking for big open spaces. I was looking for rooms where we could isolate people for vocals, where we could isolate guitar cabs, stuff like that.
Oh.
So I went to my realtor and said, so this is going to be a very weird search. We're going to be looking all over. We looked in the Springs. I looked out east in the Plains. I looked in Fort Collins, Denver, all over the place. And I was looking at places in the mountain, but I thought it probably wasn't going to be feasible. And then the realtor ended up finding this place on Floyd Hill and sent me the pictures. And it's this really cool, like vintage, kind of feel. It was built in 1975 or six.
Mm-hmm.
It has the sunken conversation pit in the living room. There is shag carpet on a lot of the walls. I think a lot of things that people, you know,
would get rid of immediately.
Yes, which I have held on to or 7 years in. And it's funny, I won't lie, when I first walked in, I was like, it's a little cringe. But 7 years in, I actually have really come to love it. It's got a lot of character. I think it's a comfortable space for people. So like I said, I had no real intention of coming to Clear Creek, but I've been pinching myself for 7 years that we ended up in Clear Creek, and have really, I go to Loveland all the time. It is just, it's really, the more that I learn about Clear Creek, the more I love it. So unfortunately, y'all are stuck with me.
Oh, you are such an asset in so many
ways.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah, so lucky. So how many places do you think you looked at before you found gem?
I looked at over 30.
Wow.
And it was very, I feel bad for the realtor. We'd go in, I would bring a snare drum with me. And we'd walk into the space that I thought might be our main recording space, and I'd hit the snare drum, and I'd be like, yep, we're done here. And she's like, but the bathrooms, the kitchen. And I said, this is all kind of immaterial at this point.
Yeah.
Like, if the bathrooms are falling apart, but the room sounds really good, I'm going to pick that home.
That
so
was
it
your
was,
priority.
It was a long search. And I did, when I found where we are at now, I walked in and I hit the drum and it's like, I cannot believe how good this sounds already, and kind of new. And the guy I work with, Rich, he is not the most effusive with praise, is how I'd put it. If you get an I don't hate this, that is high praise from him. And so I went and saw the place first, and then I said, I really want you to see it before we move forward. And he came out, and we were waiting for the realtor, and he was looking through the front window, and he was like, "Oh my God. Oh my God, this looks so good." And that was the moment I was like, you know, I felt good about this, but this is it. And it really has been fantastic for us.
Wow, that's terrific.
Yep.
So just so we can picture this, you've described the inside. I can kind of remember I was recently in a home on Genesee that had that sunken...
Yep. Like the conversation, 70s conversation pit.
Is that what it is?
That's what people keep calling it when they come in.
Okay.
I was born in 83, so I'm not a reliable source.
For that, huh?
Yes.
And then shag carpeting on the walls.
Yes.
What color, by the way?
So the shag is like an orangish-brown kind of thing. So there's orangish-brown. So... Rich, my production partner, he also lives at the studio. Mm-hmm. So in his room, he's got some orangish-brown shag on the wall. Then there's a room next to him, which we've turned into what we call a cab room. So we'll have the guitar player and their amp will be in the actual studio with us.
Mm-hmm.
And then the speakers, the speaker cabinet, mm-hmm. is in the separate room.
Oh, wow.
So that's really nice. For the player, because they're not going deaf standing next to the speaker, it's really nice for us. We can actually communicate with the person. We can see what they're doing.
Oh.
So anyways, that room, for whatever reason, has shag carpet on the wall and the floor.
Oh, boy.
And then there's...
Bonus.
Then there's classic wood paneling on three of the other walls. And then Heather and I... we have the same style of shag, but ours has a green kind of feel to it. And there's also, for some
reason...
Kind of a pea green. Pea green is the lighter shade, and then there's some darker shades.
I had this carpet in my bedroom growing up.
That's incredible. I have to be honest, when I walked in the house, I mean, when I saw the pictures, I'd seen a place in Conifer that was similar. But I walked in and I felt like I was smelling every person and experience that had happened in that place. So when I first saw it, I was like, one, I had no idea that carpet on the wall was actually a thing, not just a joke. And then two, I was like, this place probably smells terrible and needs a ton of work. And for whatever reason, the woman and her husband that built the place, which funnily enough, they actually owned a motel here in Idaho Springs.
Okay.
But they did a fantastic job of taking care of the place. So it's really held up well.
Yeah. So it wasn't really stinky and when you walked
in. It has kind of that, it reminded me of kind of my grandmother's home. It's not unpleasant, but it smells like it's been there for a while, or it did. And I think now it smells like us, for better or worse.
So this really, what you walked into then has been the decor since it was built in the 70s?
As far as I know. I'm going to assume that the carpet on the wall... is the same. The carpet on the floor is in like fantastic shape.
Oh.
And that makes me think that they probably updated that since then. But yeah, it's 70s. My realtor was actually like, she sent me pictures and was like, so the main room, I'll step back for a second. It's got this beautiful warm wood paneling. There's some carpet higher on the wall, but it is like a flat brown. So it's funny, the first few times I thought maybe it was like a leather kind of material or something, and then I realized it was carpet, which is actually good for sound. It deadens the space. But yeah, it's this really warm, inviting feel, and my realtor was like, you could just paint everything white. And I was like, I know people are doing that, but this is great. And also my girlfriend hates this as well, but I like buying guitars and instruments. So when I'm thinking about, I'm like, I don't really love the idea of white. And then I'm like, that's a guitar that I'm not buying right now.
Right.
So they're not the most conventional lines of thoughts, but for what we do, they work.
Wow, that's terrific. Yeah. You know, one might wonder, top of Floyd Hill, right off of I-70, how much noise do you get from the highway?
That was the other thing. When I first saw the place, so my realtor found it, it just had a price drop. And she said, we have to go. She was like, this is going to be gone by the end of the week. And this was maybe Wednesday.
Mm.
And we run sessions noon to 10. And I was like, I'm tied up till at least 9. I think we got done early. And she said, you know what? I will totally meet you there late at night. So I drove up there, and she was running a little late. And I parked in the parking lot. And I opened the windows. It was, I think, maybe May at this point. Nice evening. And I was sitting there, and I was like, well, you know, this was a nice thought, but I-70 is pretty loud right here. And then
this is in the evening.
And this is in the evening, yes. And yeah. So we opened the door and then closed the door. And I was like, I cannot believe it. I cannot hear the interstate at all.
Really?
And every so often, so sometimes you have someone who just plays really delicately on like an acoustic guitar, and you're cranking the mic up, and you can hear the room at that point. It's got this kind of thing happening, and so you'll have a semi or something that is, I believe they call it engine braking, and you'll hear the low end rumble of that, but that's fairly rare we're dealing with that. And then we did, about a year in, it's funny, I moved up, and at our previous location, we started next to a shutdown golf course. They actually sold that golf course and built all these homes. So for years, I woke up to beeping of construction. I was like, oh, today's the day we start to go out of business. And we made it through that. And then we moved. I was like, this is wonderful. Like, this is all developed. No one's going to build next to us. Well, there was one empty lot right next to us. And of course, it sold, and they started building like 6 months in. We were doing vocals in the room with the shag carpet on the floor and the walls. The tech that we've used for years, he's designed studio spaces, and he came and looked at spaces and determined that the utility space for the boiler, we had a lot of it. He said, if we kind of have this is going to work really well. It was in the basement.
No.
And so if for whatever reason we're having someone's really quiet and we know we're going to have the problem, we put them in the basement. And we've been recording down there in the summer when the whole house shakes from thunder. Oh. And we played the take back and it's clean.
Really?
Yeah. So
amazing.
So we really, I mean, I think, it's funny, I don't want to talk bad about modern construction, but I think the fact that it was built in the 70s, and, I mean, it is just a tank.
Solid.
It's a tank of a house. And I think that went a long way for us.
Yeah. Well, that's terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would imagine when you walked in, after hearing all that noise,
yes,
shut the door, that was probably about as good as a snare drum.
Yeah, it really was, you know, because I walked in and I said, holy cow, nothing I've seen. I mean, the main room, I don't know what the exact dimensions are, but it's probably about 30 by 30.
Mm-hmm.
And in recording, you don't want parallel walls. I won't get into the details on that, but it just creates issues. You get buildup of certain frequencies, or you get frequencies canceling themselves out.
So that would be like two walls side by side?
Yeah, so, I mean, your
like
standard, like this room right here to my left, the wall to the right,
yeah,
they're parallel. It's going to be, as the sound bounces back and forth, it's never changing. It's never like bouncing and refracting in different ways.
I see.
And so they sell these like diffusion panels where they've got all these small pieces of wood of different sizes. And so just the different sizes, that frequency went a little farther than this one, and then they diffuse in a pleasant way. And so this room, there's this strange curvature in the backs of it, and then there also is rock, which is not the best sonically, but there's only a little bit, and it's like river rock. So, again,
it's smooth.
It's smooth slash rough, but there's a lot of differences in the heights and, you know, how far the sound is traveling. So for whatever reason, it really works. So yeah, when I walked in, it was like, oh wow, it's really loud, but this room sounds incredible. And then we closed the door, and then it was like, eureka, this might actually work.
Truly.
You know? And the other thing I didn't mention is the family we were renting from, they gave us a finite time to move out. We were booked for the entirety of that time. So I was trying to like move. It was kind of like, let's transfer the passengers on the plane mid-flight.
Yeah.
So it was doubly euphoric, knowing that it was like, oh my God, we've looked at 30 houses and this might actually work. Because I started thinking, it was like, man, we might just have to rent again because I don't want to buy if it's not the perfect place. You know?
Yeah. So. But it sounds like this space was the perfect space.
I mean, I literally pinch myself. Every day I'm like, am I really living on the side of this beautiful mountain in this incredible home? This, you know, people are driving by from all over the country and the world all day long to vacation out here. And I get to wake up and then I get to do what I love, which is making music and working with great people all day. So
wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, so happy that you found it.
Thank you.
And so happy it was in Clear Creek County.
Yes, me as well.
That is terrific.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what your trajectory into now, you know, helping these musicians make their music sound phenomenal.
Yep. So I've always played music. Growing up, my mother had me taking classical piano lessons, probably from, I don't know, maybe 5 till 12, something like that, 12, 13. So I'm a middle child. I have a younger brother, older sister. I don't think any of us really enjoyed classical piano, but my mother tells me now, she's like, they just were like bored and checked out, and she said that I would kind of get lost in it. So I played piano, and it's funny, I always thought of people that made music as magicians. For the longest time growing up, it was like, that's something I don't do. I read notes off a page. And, you know, that's some kind of magic and witchcraft going into making the music. But I got to high school, and there's a guy, Ed Prassy, that taught a guitar class there. And I got to high school.
And this is in Florida.
This is in Florida.
Where you grew up.
Yeah, and so I was like, you know, this piano, classical piano is not very cool. But guitar seems cool. And his whole setup was about more like contemporary music, but also how to create music. So I remember the day that he was like, this is a scale. And he's like, if you know the key, then you play the scale in this key and things are going to work out better for you. And I remember sitting outside. We'd go out to the parking lot so that we could all play and actually hear. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting out with my friend David Gomez, and he was playing some classic rock song. And I started playing the scale, and it was like, oh my God, I'm doing it, you know? And that just, like, that was the spark. And from there, I went from being like, oh, music is cool, to really loving it. So I went to college. I thought I was going to maybe be like an international lawyer or something. I was reading maybe too much John Grisham at the time. And went to school in Virginia, got about halfway through the year, and was like spending all my free time playing guitar. And I said, you know what, I want to do guitar. So at that point, I thought I was going to be in a band. Something like that. So I ended up transferring back to Florida. I went to Florida State University, did music school there, was still thinking I was going to do a band, actually moved out to Crested Butte, which was interesting. I was very naive and was like, I'm going to move to this very small mountain town and I'll find great musicians to start a band with. And there were some very nice musicians. I don't know that I'd call them great musicians there. And then I tore my ACL directly before the season started. I was going to snowboard. And so I ended up just sitting. I worked at a pizza place and making bar food. I ended up sitting at home and all my free time and recording myself.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And so by the spring, I was thinking, I was like, you know, I want to do music, but I haven't really found the people that I really feel like I connect with as far as creating music. And I was like, I like recording, and maybe this is a way I could make money and do music more consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking at options, ended up finding this Full Sail University in Orlando, Florida. And they focus on, they're a technical school, and they teach audio engineering. They do like film production, they do video game stuff. So I looked down there and was thinking, oh, I'm going to be an engineer. Went down there, did a 1-year program for engineering, which was great. Came out of that, didn't really have a lot of opportunities. My father, he said, he constantly was kind of on me and was always like, you know, like maybe pick up some business skills. And, you know, in his mind, he's looking at music and saying that's a tough go. Mm-hmm. Which it is. I always tell people, if you don't really love it, you know, you should do something else, because it is very, it's hard. But if you love it, it's very fulfilling, the actual process.
Because it may take a while to make some money,
I mean,
doing it, so you got to love it along the way.
And realistically, you may never make money.
Yeah.
You know, my brother is a transplant surgeon, and he has worked incredibly hard to do that. But there's a pretty defined path. Mm-hmm. You know, you do this, take these tests, do well, do this, do well, do this. Now you're a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do the exact same thing your favorite, most successful artist is doing and have completely different experience. And the longer I've done this, I find, you know, there's a ton of really fantastic artists out there. And you kind of see the tip of the iceberg of those. So yeah, anyways, I was at Full Sail. My dad, I was coming out and was like, well, I guess I'm going to get kind of a job and try to find a job in a studio or an internship. And then they had a 1-year master's in entertainment business program. And he was saying, you know, I think this would be worth looking into. And if I'm being honest, I only really considered it because the idea of going and like getting a job somewhere was not very appealing. And I was like, maybe I can push it off. And that ended up being like the greatest thing.
Oh, and where was that?
So that was at Full Sail University.
Oh, awesome.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
But I had, you know, I had the musical, I had the know-how. Mm-hmm. I think I got the talent. I really did not know how to harness it. And I kind of was coming in with this idea of business is the devil. And I do think business and art, you know, they can work well together, but they kind of want different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyways, I did it, and that just opened my eyes, and I realized if I can monetize this, I can do it all the time. If I can do it all the time, then I can really get good.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, I apologize. This story is going on and on.
But fascinating.
That's good. So I did that, and I made some really good. I got involved in film or audio for film at Full Sail.
Mm-hmm.
There was kind of this, I believe they called it Spark, which was a separate group of students. And through that, I made really good connections with a couple women in the career development department. And I'd done well in school, and so they were looking out for me, and they got me an internship at the studio, Radio Star Studios in Northern California.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And that's where my production partner, Rich Veltrop, was working. So Rich is about 20 years older than I am, and Rich actually went to Full Sail when they were in like a trailer in the 80s, and then when I went there, it's a sprawling campus. But then he was in LA in the 90s. He met this woman, Sylvia Massey, that's done a bunch of really cool stuff. She'd met a guy in Northern California, fell in love, decided to move up there, and people were still calling all the time saying, we want you to produce and engineer our records. So she went to Rich and said, are you interested in moving out of LA. She's like, I can't find anyone that wants to leave. And Rich had had enough. This was 2001. Mm. So they moved up there and started Radio Star. And then I got an internship in 2011. At that point, I was still thinking I wanted to engineer.
Uh-huh.
And then I was assisting on a bunch of projects and then got some opportunities. And then as I was working with people, I realized, I was like, I really like being hands-on with the music more. I'm a multi-instrumentalist as well, so I will build tracks with people a lot of times. Mm. And so that was kind of how that developed. And
so you're playing on some of these tracks as well?
Yes, there's some tracks that I do all of the music.
Wow.
For. Mm-hmm. And then there's other stuff. You know, sometimes a full band comes in, and that band already knows exactly what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And our job is more capturing it, making sure we're getting good tones, we're getting good performances, we're getting the most out of what the artist can do. Then there's other times that they come in, they're like, I've got lyrics, I've got melody, I've got a guitar. But like maybe they're doing a country thing. They want pedal steel. I don't play pedal steel. So we call our buddy Jeff Rady. Mm-hmm. He comes in and we work with Jeff and the artist, very collaborative. Okay, let's try this. Oh, that's working great. Let's do more of that. Let's try this. Oh, we don't like that so much. What else can we do there?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of slowly work through and then eventually you get to a point and everybody's sitting back. It's like, man,
wow.
It all just feels good.
Yeah. So you're there a year.
Yes.
And finish this internship, which sounds rich.
Yes.
Rich with experience.
Very much so.
And connections. And
yep.
Yeah. And from there?
Yep.
Where'd you go?
So from there, we went. So it was interesting. Sylvia and I actually had put together a business plan. We were thinking of going to San Fran and starting a rehearsal studio. And the idea was that we'd have a rehearsal studio and a studio attached to it. And the hope was that the rehearsal studio is the moneymaker, and then we could kind of handpick who we wanted to work with, more like a record label. So we put together, from the entertainment business program, I'd learned how to put together a business plan. So Sylvia and I put the whole thing together. And then her and I, we also were putting together this festival out there. We did a year of it. That was great. We were trying to do a bigger thing the second year, and then her and I weren't seeing eye to eye, and decided to go separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
So she did the festival. I stayed out there for a little while longer, still working at the studio. And then Rich and I, after the festival, we'd kind of hit it off and had started, like, late night after sessions. We're just having fun making music. And Sylvia was talking about kind of downsizing, maybe doing something else. And so I went to Rich and said, you know, I think we could do something good. And my best friend from Florida was here in Denver. And so I took our business plan and reworked it. And then went to my buddy, and him and his uncle have a company. They basically produce corporate events, conferences, stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So I went to him and said, are you interested in investing or giving me a loan? And they ended up giving me a loan to get started. And then he convinced me to come to Denver, which at the time he was like, you know, you should come to Denver. And I was like, I know the skiing and snowboarding is incredible. I was like, I don't know why I would go there for music. And he's like, no, really, there's like this incredible scene. So I flew out for a weekend. We went to some shows. And I was like, man, this is really cool. And then I kind of reached out to some people and talked. And I came away feeling like there's a ton of great musicians. There is not a ton of infrastructure as far as trying to do something with the music. There are, like, there's the Blasting Room in Fort Collins that's done a lot of cool stuff. And
that opportunity for you,
opportunity
right?
for us, yeah. And so I said, you know what? We got support here. Let's make the jump. And made the jump. That was 2012. And then we were up and running by 2013.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, and it's wild to think it's been 13 years now.
That's terrific. Well, Glenn, what an interesting journey
Thank
to
you.
Get you from Florida to Floyd Hill.
Yes, very much so.
There's a song right there.
I'm telling you, a song or a book or something.
Very good. Well, let's take just a little bit of a break.
Great.
And then we'll come back and we'll learn more about the Spot Studios with Glenn Sawyer. Lori Beckel here on the What's Upstream show with this very interesting story, real life story being told by Glenn Sawyer, our new community member here in Clear Creek County, making music and jamming with folks up on Floyd Hill. So interesting at the Spot Studio. This is very... much the right PA system public announcement to read right now, Acoustic Jam Night, second Fridays. So that would be probably this Friday, I would think.
Yep.
It's Friday the 13th. So second Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. at Westbound and Down. You know, people... Glenn Sawyer may show up for one of these acoustic jam nights, and you might be able to meet him in person.
Yep, I will definitely be at one of those. I met Nick
so
at
fun.
Cotton Mountain, who's running it, and I told him I'd be at one, so now I have to be at one.
Now you do. Yes. You've committed to it on KYGT Radio.
That's right.
Listening here on the radio dial 102.7 and 103.9. Streaming worldwide at clearcreekradio.com. So let's get back for the last part of our show and talk with Glenn a bit more about actually what he's doing up at the Spot Studio.
Cool.
So, yeah, take it away, Glenn.
Yeah, so we do a little bit of everything as far as stylistically, and it's really interesting. We kind of meet all different walks of life. You know, it's not just like this type of person is making music. You know, you get a little bit of everything.
Yeah. And different kind of people, different kind of genres.
Yes. Which I love. I am very, all over the place musically. I hear something and it piques my interest and I say, I'm going to go home and try something like that. And so I love the giving back. And it is when you hear someone say, oh my God, that's how I imagined it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is the coolest feeling. And then also selfishly, you know, I get to indulge all these interests, that I've always had and wanted to kind of dip my toe into. And it's really great. I am more of an instrumentalist than a lyricist. And so you have these fantastic songwriters that come in, and they have this vision, and then it's kind of a puzzle, and how do you put it all together and make it work? And then it's also very interesting because it's funny, when I went to school, it's very technical. This is what this knob does, this is what a preamp is, so on. And then you get into a studio and you're like, you know, they probably should have given me a psychology course, because you're just dealing with people and like how to get people over the hump. If they're hitting a wall, you know, how to get, you get the band where this guy thinks is adamant it should be this way, this guy thinks the exact opposite, you know, how do you bring that
mediation
together?
Right there in the studio.
You know, so I am, one of the reasons I'm thankful for Clear Creek is, you know, you get out for a nice hike, a little solo hike, it's a great chance to clear your head, you know, and leave some of that behind. But yeah, it's just, it's really wonderful. And, you know, we see people that are doing it just because they love doing it. You know, and then there's people that are looking to take over the world. We just, in the past couple of years, worked with a band, Magoo, that is really taking off in the bluegrass scene. And so it's equally exciting to see stuff where, you know, they were at Winter Wondergrass up in Steamboat, playing, you know, and getting a lot of respect and attention. And then you work with this other guy who's, you know, maybe he worked his whole life and then came back. He was like, I always wanted to do music, and now we're helping him do that, you know, and it's that is a really cool thing. And I find we get done with these things and you look back and you're like, wow, I made a new friend, or friends. But also it's a lot of work. It's more work than I think a lot of people like see documentaries. It's like, oh my God, it's just all fun and games. And you know, when you're on take 40 trying to get this one guitar part, you know, it gets frustrating, but then when you get it, it's a great feeling. And so it's this really great experience. The process is really fulfilling. And then years down the line, I listen to stuff we did back in 2015, you know, and it still sounds great. And so it's just really fulfilling.
It sounds like there's quite a creative process.
Yes.
When someone walks through your door into your great recording space.
Yes.
It may be a variety of different kinds of people.
Yes.
And with, as you say, different ideas. Some may be fully baked,
yes,
or so they think. Some may be not baked at all.
Yes.
Just with an idea.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. So you must really individualize then much everything you do.
Yes. That's a huge thing for me. It's art. So it's really important when I sit down with an artist, the first thing I say is the only thing that's wrong is what you don't like. You know, and obviously if you were trying to make, you're like, we want to make a top 40 pop song, you need to stay within certain bounds. But at the end of the day, it's art. And there's stuff that people played for me and I'm like, you know, I have to be honest, there's nothing redeeming about this for me, and they'll look me in the eye and be like, this like means everything to me, and that's art. You know, and the beauty of art is not everyone is gonna like it. But yeah, so we sit down, the biggest thing is communication. I'm telling people all the time, I need honesty. I tell them, I'm gonna be honest with you. If I think something could be better, I'm gonna let you know. Generally I'm coming with a suggestion of what I think we could do to make it better. I'm not just saying that sucks, figure it out. You know, it's like, hey, I see what you're doing there, but I think we could do this. And sometimes you end up doing that. Sometimes there's a dynamic where I say an idea and then you come back and you're like, oh, I don't like the idea of that instrument, but I like the idea of that melody. And what if I sang it? And so you kind of get
collaboration.
Yes, the ball is rolling then.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's having that dialogue and then constantly, you know, I'm sure people we've worked with hear this. They'll be like, yeah, you know, maybe I come up with something. I'm like, okay, what do you think? And they'll be like, yeah, I like it. And I'll be like, do you really like it? Are you just trying to be nice? Because you really need to believe in it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I also believe if an artist believes in their work, they're going to go out and promote it and they're going to put it out. Mm-hmm. And I know I've got a little bit of perfectionist myself. And if there's one little thing that's bugging me, mm-hmm. maybe I'm not telling you to take a listen. And so that is something we think about a lot, is trying to make sure that we're being true to the artist. And I also say, if you and I aren't seeing eye to eye and you feel strongly about something, I'm going to come to your side, because ultimately, you know, our names are in the back. Produced, engineered by Glenn Sawyer and Rich Veltrob at the Spot Studios, their faces on the front. Mm-hmm. I'm telling a handful of people that I know that they might like this. They're going out and really pushing it. So that's a huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do these artists find you?
So these days, there's a lot of word of mouth. Mm-hmm. I also, over the years, I've done a ton of outreach. Mm-hmm. So for me, the making art is not, you know, this is not going to a restaurant and having a hamburger, where, you know, I can go to most restaurants and I feel pretty comfortable that if I say it's medium, I want a medium burger, it's going to come out relatively close. Mm-hmm. If it comes out well done, it's one burger. You know, this is not chasing me around. It's not, my face is not attached to it, you know. So for me, that's really back to the previous question. You really need to have a good relationship. You need to have good communication. And so my outreach, I feel like, is a way of starting mm-hmm. on that and saying, look, you know, you have no idea who I am, mm-hmm. But I have invested some time in this even prior to us meeting. So what I do is I look for bands and artists.
Invested time in that particular artist?
Yes.
Yeah, so, you've gotten to know kind of who you're listening to.
Yes. Yeah, so basically my process is I find bands and artists, mm-hmm. And I've done it different ways over the years. These days I look at a lot of show calendars. Mm-hmm. So if artists are playing, they're active. Mm-hmm. So I start there, and I'll go through, and a lot of times it's like, oh, I've been seeing that band for 10 years, you know, or we're recording that band already. But then you find one, and it's, oh, I've never heard of this band before. And so next thing I do is I go and listen. Mm-hmm. And if it's something that sparks my interest, I'll reach out. And so I'll listen to more, mm-hmm. and then I reach out, and I start my email. I address them either by name or by, you know, band name, and then it is, hey, how's it going? I'm Glenn Sawyer, blah, blah, blah. And then I say, I checked out your music. And I'll find something that I like mm-hmm. about the music. Early on, when I was kind of figuring it out, I was like, I need to let people know that there could be improvement, and that was a terrible idea. People were like, how dare you? And I said, you know, that is valid. And so what I've learned is I find something, usually maybe the recording's not great, but the song is great. And so I comment on the song or on a melody or something. And again, that's me saying, hey, I get a ton of spam mm-hmm. On either email or through social media, and it's unpersonalized, and I can tell that they sent this out. They didn't pick me. Mm-hmm. Because they were interested in me. They sent the same thing out yeah. to thousands of people, and they're hoping that I bite. Mm-hmm. So I do a personalized thing, and basically I reach out and I invite them to either come to the studio for a tour or to get on a phone call. Mm-hmm. And so from there we have a chance to create a rapport. Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, for me it's about music, but I'm also about people and relationships. So it's a chance to actually get to know people. And then you learn more about what they do. And then from there, if things are going well, you start saying, okay, well, this is cool. Like what should we do? Should we do a song? Do you want to do an EP? What's the goal? And then we start getting into, okay, what is that going to look like? How does that work? All of those things.
I see. And then there's a business aspect to this.
Yes.
So is it expensive? to record?
Recording in general is expensive. Music, you know, it's crazy because, as we talked about earlier, you know, it can be like bleeding a stone, trying to make money doing music. But in order to engage in making music, it costs a lot of money. You know, there really is, you can find a budget guitar, a budget keyboard, and you can find a lot that are really good. But like most things, if you spend the actual money, you're going to get something that's really good. So recording is typically a pretty expensive process. We kind of look at it, both Rich and I, the only reason that we do this is we love it. I'd say all the time, the day I wake up and I'm not having fun doing this, I'm going and doing something else, because it is just way too much work if I'm not enjoying myself. So for us, we really, I think the reason that Rich and I have worked together so long is, at our core, we want the same thing, which is to make great music. And him and I, we, you know, in any relationship, you have ups and downs, and we butt heads about, I think it should be this way or that. But we always, we come back because we both want that thing. And so for me, I'm kind of always thinking about the artist. And I think, you know, the stereotype is the stereotype, because there is truth there that there is not a lot of money. Typically, musicians are not the most wealthy people. And that is not blanket across the board. You know, we know a ton of great musicians that, you know, are doing, are very successful in their careers. There's a lot that have invested so much into their art that they are just like, they're like, I just need to get by and pay the bills so I can do the art thing. So I really try to think of, because I am not, I'm trying to pay my bills, I'm trying to get by, I want to have a decent life, but I also, I love making music, and I know it's not always, you know, it's a lot of people, I see a ton of artists that are cutting corners because they're forced to. And so we try to really make it accessible. We do a lot of things. We do like buy the song, package deals for bigger projects. If it seems like this is something that might balloon a little bit, we will do something where we say we'll essentially kind of cap this. And that still costs money. It is not, certainly not something that you're like, oh, well, I got a couple extra bucks, I'm going to come in there and do it. But we, with those package deals, it kind of allows us to really give things the love they deserve. And then it's also for our clients, they come in and they say, you know what, this might be a decent chunk of change, but we know exactly what we're getting into. And there's times that we eat it on those things. You know, we say, oh, this will take this many days, and it takes 2 days more than that. And you're like, well, we were making this much per day, and now I'd be doing better at Taco Bell. You know, but ultimately you end up with a product that's really good. They're really happy. We have a ton of return clients, and then also you have something that's out in the world. And for us, all of these things are kind of like lottery tickets. You know, I had the privilege of interning with two very successful people in the past, and both of them had a band or artist that took off. And then everyone and their brother wanted to work with them from there. So for us, you're like, well, you know, that one we like kind of lost some money on, but we're really proud of what it ended up being. And then a lot of times that comes back, they talk to someone, somebody hears it, and it ends up working out. So we're definitely, it is a business. You know, I spend a lot of time making sure that our bills are paid and that I'm able to fix the gear. You know, we have a lot of instruments so that we can create on the spot, but they take upkeep and all that. So I'm making sure I'm doing that, but I also, you know, we're trying to do it, I guess, for a bigger reason than just trying to put money in the bank.
And it sounds like you're pretty busy.
We are. So we, I think, because of the care and attention we take, and we're not...
You have a good reputation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been in business for 13 years for a recording studio. That's a pretty good run. Mm-hmm. And then, like, right now, I think we're booked about 5.5-6 months out.
Wow.
Which is... That comes and goes. You know, there's been times... Been too many times that I'm, you know, what am I doing next Wednesday? You know, but then there's also been, you know, several times where you're out front like that. And what I've learned is when it's really good, you kind of, you're like, let's kind of squirrel this away. Mm-hmm. You know, it's raining right now, but next year it might be a drought.
Yeah.
So I've definitely... Coming in, you know, my experience at Full Sail and getting the master's in entertainment business was good. The lessons I have learned in actually doing the job have really been the ones that have stuck, you know.
Sure,
yep.
Sure. Well, such an interesting both story of you landing into this... it's really more than a job, isn't it?
Yes.
It's work?
It's my passion. I mean, it might be my calling.
Yeah.
You know, I just am. I definitely, my whole life is built around how do we keep this thing going, you know? So I think it's definitely more than a job.
Yeah. So. And, boy, I betcha when we drive by, if we knew where to look for you,
yep.
I bet we'd just see like rainbows,
yep.
Like over your house.
That's how I envision it.
Something like that.
Yes.
So fascinating, both to hear how you got where you are and to hear how much it means to you,
yep.
And why it means that to you. And I'm just wondering, Glenn Sawyer, if you have any kind of final thoughts for our listeners out there.
I guess, first off, just thank you again.
Sure.
For giving me this opportunity.
Of course.
I always enjoy hanging with you, and it's great to do it on the radio.
Yeah.
Today. And then, I guess, too, I would just encourage people to follow what excites them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I think for me, it's music. And as we've kind of talked about, I think it's really dedicating yourself to something, regardless of what that is, whether it's a sport, a passion, an art, politics, whatever it is, you know, doing something like that, I think is just incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think it, you know, there's a lot of things that, to me, go into making a good life, you know, but I think being aware of what makes you tick,
mm-hmm.
and digging in on that, I think, is a great thing. So I'd encourage people to try to do that.
Well, you've been a great example of that, sharing your journey with us today. So fascinating. Well, thank you, Glenn Sawyer, mm-hmm. for being on What's Upstream today. Next Wednesday, our show is the third Wednesday of the month, so we are lucky to have the History Women on with us next Wednesday, so listen in for that. Maybe go to the Acoustic Jam Night on Friday night, starting at 5, going until 8 at Westbound and Down. And in the meantime, y'all, just be safe out there. And take good care of each other and be kind.